We're talking with Robert Landori. He's the author of Havana Harvest. You can find more about him at coasttocoastam.com. Getting phone calls from people who have and have not had offshore banking, or who have been involved or perhaps been the victim of money laundering too. We'll get your calls, your questions, your comments about offshore banking, Swiss bank accounts, the secrets of secret banking, and money laundering next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Well, before we get to the calls, and there are like a wild card line open if you want to grab one right now for Robert Landori. Let me ask you, Robert, was your mother's name Eva?
That is correct.
Okay, I looked up her art. You're right.
You did?
Yeah.
How very nice of you.
She's good, obviously. There are still many of her pieces that are highly traded and collected. Eva Landori, would you say she was... She seemed like a part of the maybe post-impressionist early modern art movement.
I would say modern art. Yes, she was very eclectic. She had a period where she painted like Jason Pollock. We lived in France for a while, and she was she met many of the people who were outstanding painters. Like for example, I met Matisse with her because she was friendly with him. And we settled in Canada, but there are very few. She had about, I don't know, 500 or 600 pieces, and some of them were very good, others were not so good. Well, and they're all in private collections as well as in some public places.
Well, the one I looked at was really good. The one I saw was, it looked very Matisse. It looked like early Picasso, very, very cool. It was being either it was the subject of an online auction discussion, and it was from about 1912. Is that about right? The painting?
No, that would be true. My mother was born in 1912.
Oh, okay. Then that's what they said. Then that's what the 1912 referred to. It said 1912 next to her name. So, so it wasn't the age of the painting. That was the
my mother's highlight of career. Was really just after the Second World War, 1947 to 1967.
Well, it was nice. It's
and,
a nice piece.
That's when she produced most of her work, and she traded a lot of it with other artists. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, there's a painting at the Hungarian National Museum in Ottawa, at the National Gallery, in the Montreal Fine Arts, and so on, in Ljubljana, in Rome. And the paintings all over the place.
Well, the one I looked at was beautiful. I'm not a big fan of Jackson Pollock, but it didn't. She wasn't in her Jackson Pollock phase yet then, because it. But it was. I really like East of the Rockies. Let's get Brian in Pittsburgh for Robert Landori, author of Havana Harvest, expert on money laundering and offshore banking. Brian.
Yes. How you doing?
Hi. Ever done any of that, Brian?
No, but I found some disturbing information a number of years ago, and I kind of see a trend of that happening here with some of the stuff that's come out on disparities. But in Honduras during the 80s and then late 90s in the El Salvador, and this holds true for both Batista there before Fidel and Chavez right now. What I found in Honduras and there was this concept that I hadn't even known about, and that was the oligarchy states that had existed, and kind of the worst case direction that capitalism can take is these oligarch situations. I remember an interview with someone that interviewed Chavez before he got too powerful, and said he wasn't nearly as left until we tried to do the coup. But my point is, my understanding is a lot of these oligarchs, which we have supported, use these offshore banks to funnel off tons of money. And if you remember, Chavez got elected by the poor people that just had enough of these oligarchs. That was the true with the Sandinista-Contra issue. It's happening in Bolivia right now. And we need to step back and take a look at it. It's not, we can fault Chavez for what he's doing, but some of these oligarchs basically that we've supported and use these offshore accounts have led us into these situations. So, and we've always supported these guys. I've never understood why you know, kind of the worst situation in capitalism. I see we're going that direction here with the income disparity. So okay. I want to see if that's what you think about that.
Robert?
Well, it's an interesting thing. First of all, you want to understand that what you call these oligarchs met in 1994 at the first summit of the Americas to sign a bill that would make this kind of corruption illegal. That was in 1994. The people who participated in that one, as I said, were 34. Today, 15 years later, almost a dozen who signed the anti-corruption and anti-money laundering bill are either in the can, in prison, or under indictment, or spent years dodging criminal charges. The list of these people is absolutely frightening. There was Alberto Fujimori of Peru. I don't know whether you've ever heard of him.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Then there was, and then there was the two Papa Docs and Baby Doc in Haiti. There was Noriega in Panama. There was Salinas in Mexico. In the Philippines, Imelda and Ferdinand Marcos, Imelda of the shoes, right?
Right.
And there was Mr. Batista, and there was the Saddam Hussein, whom I referred to in our previous hour. I mean, this goes on and will go on as long as there are such powerful oligarchs, as you call them, who are crooked. Remember Idi Amin? Just
sure.
Think about him. He was a very nice guy, wasn't he? There was the Liberia. Nobody knows of him, but his name is Samuel Doe and Charles Taylor, you've heard of.
Yeah, Taylor.
Nigeria's Sani Abache. I mean, it just goes on. There's human greed is infinite.
We'll go to west of the Rockies. Brad is in Las Vegas on Coast to Coast for Robert Landori, expert on money laundering and offshore banking. Brad?
Hi, Ian. Hi, Robert. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hi. Good, good.
Okay, cool. My question is regarding the risk involved in stashing money offshore. From my understanding, a lot of these countries which perform hush-hush offshore banking operations, they're in quite volatile regions politically, like Panama. What is the risk involved in putting your money in a foreign bank if there's like a revolution or something in that country?
Well, there are two risks. One of them, as you say, is the political situation. But most of these countries that I know of, like, for example, Hong Kong, are under threat from China, although China very carefully tries to keep it stable. The Cayman Islands are very stable. Panama was very unstable. Mexico was very good for a while, and then all of a sudden it blew up, and look where it is now, political upheaval. Panama now is good. The Channel Islands are very good. So, you know, if you choose carefully, you can avoid political risk. But there's another risk. Some of these banks, some of these smaller institutions there are not quite straight, and they lose your money, or at least pretend that they've lost your money, and you never see your money again.
Yeah, what can you do about it?
Because they fraud you.
Right. What's your recourse if they say we lost your money?
Very little. You have to talk to the trustee in bankruptcy like me, and you get a very cold stare from me. And I say, well, you know, you should not have put your money there, buddy. You lost it. You're SOL.
Yeah, that's true in any language. That translates
right.
No matter what language you're in. Let me go to, let's get to the first time caller line. Sally is in Central California. Sally, ever done any offshore banking or money laundering?
Hello, Ian. No, I haven't done it, but I'd like to be about doing it because I'm a possible victim of somebody that was a real slick pro. He owns 16 islands in Panama. He's got his sister down there. They head up, or she heads up, or somehow is involved with the Panamanian Foundation. The guy's estate is near $1 billion. He's dead now. He was flying, having a pilot fly him in a plane, looking at land by, ran into the side of a volcano. Horrible accident. He was sued over 25 times in four counties in California for fraud. I was the victim of it, with my entire retirement. It was the stock holdings in a company that's 17 years old that I helped start in my home. I'm in litigation. I'm practically homeless right now. I'm doing everything I can to fight this on my own. The case is almost a year old. I just found out the company was sold for over 10 to 15 times what they paid me for it, and they took my stock. I didn't want to sell it. Mr. Landori, I'm desperate, and I'm asking you intuitively. I've asked the court to create a partition trust to represent my holdings if I do, in fact, win. And what I want to know is this Panamanian Foundation, I understand that they have the bank is in charge of it, and then they can change the beneficiaries. Is there anything proactive that I can do in regards to the fact that the company was just sold to a private equity group? Is there anything I can do proactive to stand up for myself in court now that I just discovered the sale 2 months ago?
Go ahead, Robert.
The only thing I can tell you is that I'm not a Panamanian lawyer. The first thing to do, obviously, is to get a good lawyer, a reputable lawyer in Panama, to look into the situation as to what happened. I didn't quite understand how this Panamanian trust that was private was sold. If it was private and it was sold privately, there's very little you can do.
Well, there's still funds. He has a hedge fund here in California that's headed up by a former Lehman Brothers guy that is his partner, but he's dead. His estate's near $1 billion. The estate has not been closed, but there exists this Panama Foundation, and a lot of people are filing things in court that are concerned that monies are being moved into the Panama Foundation, and I'm trying to make sure that the monies for me, if I do win, don't get moved down there.
Well, it sounds also like a potential class action suit. And if you've got enough people and there's enough money, there'll be a lawyer somewhere in the United States that will take that case, don't you think?
Yes, I have the SEC looking into this, the California Department of Corporations. I just want to know what I can do to be proactive about this whole Panama angle.
Well, I think that Panama lawyer angle was pretty good. But is there anything other than that, Robert, you can think of?
Not really. Not really. Okay. You know, I cannot give you legal advice on that.
But it does sound like a difficult. How about just even accounting advice? Is there?
There are reputable accounting firms in Panama. There's KPMG, there's Pricewaterhouse. They're all there. And you can try to get an investigative accountant involved, but the first, you have to find a legal way of getting access to the books, and that is a Panamanian lawyer.
Yeah, interesting. Thank you. Marie is in Toronto, Canada, on the international line for Robert Landori. Marie?
Hi, Ian. Great.
Hello, Toronto. How are you?
Well, I like to say very good, but really I'm very bad.
No, why?
Oh, well, actually, I know too many people that are involved in laundering money. And these people are around me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to make sure that I don't survive to talk about it. But I'd like to answer one of Ian's questions, and then I wanted to ask you a question, Robert, if I could
go ahead.
Both.
Okay, if as long as you do them quickly, go ahead.
Okay, Ian, you were asking who gets the green light and who doesn't.
Right.
Right? What people need to realize is it's the head politicians that are really involved in the top of the drug trafficking ring all around the world. And we're talking presidents, prime ministers, they all get a piece of the pie. In 06, they were dropping off 1,000 kilos of cocaine here in Canada. At a time, we're talking $4 million a drop at a time. Robert, I wanted to ask you, this has nothing to do with what you said about your mother, but you were saying about your mother being a painter. You know, there's those paintings that just have a stupid line across them. And, I'm an artist. I took art. And some of these paintings, and a lot of really crappy stuff on eBay, just goes for outrageous outrageous amounts of money. And do you think that that is one way that they're involved in drug laundering?
Oh, in money laundering. Oh, that's interesting.
Money laundering, definitely.
Yeah, I said drug.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, inflated prices for things like that. It's a good way to launder money. Yeah.
And there was also the tax dodge in Canada, making a donation of a painting to the National Gallery, valuing it at $100,000 when it was only worth $10,000, and you got yourself a tax deduction for that. But, you know, that's a form of money laundering, too.
Right. Frank is in Sacramento on Coast to Coast. Frank?
Well, I have a question. I don't know if I have the term correctly. Is there such a thing as called an armitage? I'm not sure if that's the term.
Arbitrage. Arbitrage.
Ah, there you go. There you go. Yeah. How does that work?
Arbitrage is as follows. Arbitrage is usually practiced when you have foreign exchange transactions, and there is a slight fluctuation from market to market of the value of the dollar, let's say. In Switzerland, you know, the dollar may be 2 francs and 40 cents. In Paris, it may be just slightly less or slightly more. And the arbitrageur actually makes a quick deal to balance the two accounts. Do you understand what I mean?
Right, yeah.
That's arbitrage.
Well, a friend of mine, I guess she wanted to have a couple of her associates put a large amount of money in a certain bank, and
right.
They were accusing her of doing some form of arbitrage. So
arbitrage is not illegal. Arbitrage is not illegal. It's a perfectly legitimate trading of foreign currency, for example. It can also be done with goods.
I'm trying to think of wheat. Is there any other way? Is there any other term that was close to that? And I was trying to think of Hermitage, you know, for.
No, Hermitage happens to be a museum in St. Petersburg.
Right. And it's also a place in Tennessee. But I didn't know whether there were. What other word he might have been thinking of, because I thought, yeah, there's nothing illegal about arbitrage. But Steve is in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, on Coast to Coast. Steve?
Hey, how are you? I have a quick question about using offshore accounts as protection against judgments in U.S. courts. Years ago, I was told you could go with a multinational bank. They can offshore your money to some place that doesn't have U.S. jurisdictional interest.
Correct.
And
correct.
Then if you were ever required to sign an order authorizing release of the funds, the account could be set up such that when presented with such an order, the bank automatically wire it to another branch in another country where they'd have to start all over again. Is that possible or still ongoing? Or
if you can get a bank to do that, yes. But there are such things as defenders. These people are very, very well-placed lawyers who actually do the transferring in such cases when there is an emergency of some kind.
We'll get back to more questions and comments about money laundering, what you have been the victim of, whether you've had an offshore account or not, and about the secrets of secret banking. We're talking with Robert Landori. He's the author of Havana Harvest. You can find out more by going onto our webpage at coasttocoastam.com and clicking onto Robert Landori's name. It'll take you to more information about his novels, which are all informed by his experiences. Coming up on Monday night on Coast to Coast, don't miss the return of George Norrie and Jim Mars. We'll be talking about the ongoing investigation that Jim has had into who's behind the recession. He says he can name names, and he'll do it tomorrow night, what their motives are, how they manipulated the recession when there shouldn't have been one, coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. Back with your questions and comments for Robert Landori last half hour next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So we go to our last half hour with calls coming up in just a second. Again, if you missed earlier in the show, I told you about the bad weather that's coming to the eastern part of the United States, and probably in the time in which we started this show. Some folks have already started to see the first snowflakes drop of what may or may not be a major snowstorm for them, not like it was here in Minnesota today, one that brought down the collapse of the Metrodome early this morning. About 24 hours ago, the roof of the inflated dome at the Metrodome in downtown Minneapolis, which a lot of people are supposed to be calling the Mall of America Metrodome, but somehow Mall of America Field, something like that. Nobody actually calls it that around here. But anyway, so it collapsed. The weather has dropped significantly in terms of the temperature. I speak to you right now at about -4 outside, and yet I just saw my neighbor within the last 45 minutes, Handsome Lou, out shoveling his walk because I think he was gone for the weekend and came home to find out that the surface he sometimes uses to do his sidewalks didn't show up. And around Minnesota, it is a great source of shame to not have your sidewalks totally clear. So there he was out. Well, some people refer to as scraping the sidewalk, shoveling with a nice scraper the sidewalk to clear it all off. So it'd be nice and clean for the morning, because nobody wants an unshoveled walk around here. It's the source of much ridicule. I'm not kidding. I know people that are out shoveling in the middle of the snowstorm, but it was only halfway done. Anyway, so we'll get to your questions and comments. Stay warm. Stay with us next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Let's pick it up, actually, with East of the Rockies. TJ is in Minnesota on Coast to Coast. Robert Landori, author of Havana Harvest. TJ?
Ian, yeah, hey, I'm in the same boat you are weather-wise, but I came in from shoveling to get to my wood pile to throw in my wood stove. Hey, Robert, obviously you're a genius. Obviously you realize there's two paths in life for feeling right about your life. One is money. The other is wisdom and knowledge. I can't love a woman I've never met, so I don't deal much in money, but I'm greatly interested in your wisdom and knowledge. And I want to know something of two characters you've mentioned. One is Saddam Hussein. The other is Fidel Castro. I want to know your ingenious opinion based on wisdom about the character, the human character of these two individuals, because my personal opinion contradicts that of most Americans about both of those individuals based on firsthand experience with one and no firsthand experience on the other. Go ahead, right, Robert.
This is a very difficult question to answer. Saddam Hussein I never met, but I believe that he was an essentially very evil person. Fidel Castro, whom I did meet, started off as a very decent social reformer, and circumstances forced him into the communist camp, and then he became a dictator, and as you know, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Ian?
Yes?
I'd like to tell your listeners that if they write to me at havanaharvest@gmail.com, I will send them free, of course, copies of my next book's first two chapters, just to thank them for listening to me tonight.
Okay. I don't know quite where TJ would have gone with that, but I think there's a lot of people who think that somehow you can be a dictator without being an evil dictator. You can be a totalitarian dictator without being evil. And I think you could probably make a case for that in some cases, but at some point, if you're putting $600 million in a wall, then that $600 million, as you mentioned in your Saddam Hussein story earlier, that was intended to go to people in need. So
that's
even
right.
even if you don't kill them, even if you let them be, but you're not giving them the aid that other people provided for them, that's still pretty evil.
That is right. Well, of course, you know, the theory is that perhaps it's ingrained in our DNA that we are evil rather than good, which may goes against the Christian ethic that believes that we're good and then sometimes we fall off the chariot and become evil.
There's
some scientific evidence. Ask Charlie Rose. He had some scientists who seemed to think that.
Or the idea of the actually in much Christian theology would be that we are fallen, that we are sinners, and that only through religion do we pull ourselves out of that state. So
redemption, the,
redemption and to hold in tension our more baseless or base interests. William is in Texas on a wild card line on Coast to Coast for Robert Landori, expert on money laundering and offshore banking. William?
As an aside, I'd like to tell you that I cannot understand people that live up north. I was born and raised in Texas. I was transferred to Southern California and then to Syracuse, New York. And immediately I realized that I wanted to come back home to Texas. That's not the reason I called.
Well, let me just say this for that. Everybody chooses which 2 months out of the year they're going to not go outside. And I've lived in the South and I've lived into the North, and there are 2 months in either place where you're not going to spend a lot of time outdoors. And here it's the depth of winter. In the South, it was July and August. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, in Syracuse, we had two seasons. We had winter and the 4th of July.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, in 1988, my primary attorney and I took a cruise. And we went to Ocho Rios, and then we went to the Grand Caymans. And in the Grand Caymans, we met with the senior vice president of Switzerland Bank, the Bank of Switzerland. And we were talking about transferring money and how to do this and how to do that. And he was talking about how they tried to evade dealing with dope dealers, which I was not one. And he said, actually, he would set up my own bank in his office, and so therefore I would not be have to go through all of these rules and gyrations that y'all are talking about. And another thing too,
you could be your own bank.
I'm sorry?
You would have been your own bank.
Correction. That's correct. In other words, I would have been able to name the bank. I would have been a single director and a single board of trustees. I would have been the president and, you know, CEO. Huh. So it would have been my bank, but the Bank of Switzerland would not even report it because it would be my bank. They would set it up for me for a nominal fee.
Interesting. Robert, do you know anything about that?
Yeah. I can tell you this. You'd have to get a banking license, and I don't think you could have a bank in the Cayman Islands without having a capital of $1 million at least.
Well,
I know of a case where in the past that was $500,000 that you had.
Well, we were talking about more than $1 million. So that was
you can start a bank. Yes, you can start a bank, and then you're subject to the rules and regulations of the Cayman Islands for banks.
Well,
That would be a local business. Would you be soliciting deposits from offshore people, in other words, people outside the Cayman Islands?
No,
if you did,
no. It would be totally a USA to the Cayman Islands thing. It would not have to do with anyone else except for myself. But we
right.
Just,
so therefore, you would have a Subpart F corporation in Cayman, and I think that would become taxable under U.S. law.
Well, it might have been, but that was not a point that they brought up. And I'm speaking about 1988, so I'm not sure if the laws have changed since then. But one other point I want to bring quickly is that there was a jewelry store, and it had gold. They had the most beautiful watches, and as I say, 1988, some of the watches were $50,000. Some of them were $100,000. Some of the necklaces were $250,000.
Okay.
But these people also had a store in Florida. So let's say I bought one in the Cayman Islands, and then when I was in Florida, I wanted to return it. They would charge me a 10% surcharge, and therefore I would not have this as income, but it would be as a refund.
Okay.
Right.
So
right. Go ahead, Robert. A thought on that?
Yeah, I think I follow it.
Okay.
It's an interesting concept. I'd rather not comment on that one.
Maynard is in Phoenix on Coast to Coast, trying to get everybody we can in before the top of the hour. Maynard?
Sure. Okay, I have a question. I plan on possibly emigrating to South Africa in the next 3 to 5 years, and I was wondering what the ramifications of that would be towards my finances, either moving money into the country legally or otherwise.
Yeah, interesting. South Africa, did you have much to do with that?
I had very little to do with South Africa. Did you see? I didn't really hear. Is he bringing money in from South Africa?
Within the next
the United States?
No, the other way around. Within the next 3 to 5 years, he's thinking of moving to South Africa and wanted to know about the money implications of transferring his income and finances.
Once he becomes a non-resident of the United States of America, he doesn't have to pay U.S. taxes. If he's a citizen of the United States of America and a non-resident of it, he has to pay a minimum amount of tax, I think, on the first $20,000 worth of his income. What the South African laws with regard to his money in South Africa are concerned, I'm not familiar with, but he would be foolish, I think, to take it into South Africa. He should leave his money perhaps in one of the Channel Islands, which are British possession, and investigate the possibility of only reporting the income that he brings into South Africa, if he does any.
Very good. Channel Islands is a possibility. First time caller line, Michael is in San Antonio for Robert Landori. Michael?
Hi, Robert. Years ago, I was working on a tiny gold watch that had been a family heirloom. And when I was trying to get it started, I saw this 14-digit number, I think that's 14, scratched in it in tiny detail twice. And I'm wondering, could that be an account number? It may not have been 14 digits, I forget, but I had to use special magnifier to even see it, and it was hand scratched twice in this little watch. And I figured, could that be an account number? What do I do?
Like a Swiss bank account number?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Like a numbered bank account.
You have a couple of problems. It may be a bank account number, but you don't know in what country. You can assume it's Switzerland, but it may be another country. And then if it is Switzerland, which bank? I mean, there are at least 5 large private banks that would do such things.
But even if he had the number, because it had been...
The number wouldn't get me anything anyway, would it? I'd have to have my...
Some sort of proof, wouldn't he, Robert?
No, but the accounts in the 30s were set up. All you had to do is you had to produce a number. That's all.
That's it.
And
no ID.
Give you the money. But this has changed now, because you now have to give your name and the number.
Robert is in Nevada on Coast to Coast for Robert Landori. Robert?
Is this me in Maui?
Oh, it has you down as Nevada, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Nevada's where my mind is.
Okay.
I happen to be in Maui at the moment.
That's fine.
Oh, thank you. Glad I got on. Robert, I'm overwhelmed with your knowledge. Anyway, I'm 74
thank
years
you.
Old. I was... born on 9/11/1936, and I was a gold producer in the 80s, which I produced tens of thousands of ounces of gold and hundreds of thousands of ounces of silver in northern Nevada, okay? And that went along quite well, and our main buyers were Johnson Matthey in Salt Lake City,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Engelhard in mm-hmm. Los Angeles. Now,
oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. And, you know, there were times when I would actually do pickups from, I had some high investors that invested in my mine, and I would actually deliver them in my Cadillac to, and the car would be scraping bottom, you know, just because of the weight in the trunk. But anyway, that's another story. The whole reason I wanted to call you is to tell you that we decided to turn the mine back on about a year ago. And we ran an ad in one of the mining journals, and one of the people that responded was from Sierra Leone. You know where that is, right?
Yes.
Sure.
Right, and they were willing to buy the entire corporation out, which they didn't. They wanted to buy all the stock, but the main thing they wanted to know was how long had we had been in business, And how do we ever, you know, do we have accounts with Johnson, Matthey, and Engelhardt?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I believe that they wanted to do that was that we were incorporated in 1980, and we had never been sued. We've never been in a lawsuit or anything, or never filed for bankruptcy. And I think what they were trying to do is find a way to, shall we say, launder money.
Sure, let's just say that. Does that sound like a reasonable scheme for money laundering, Robert?
Well, you know, there is no money laundering involved. You produce the gold, you have a gold-producing operation, and you pay your taxes if it's a profitable operation. What you do with the gold is something that it would appear is legitimate. It goes to Johnson, Matthey, or Engelhardt. They invoice you. I'm sorry, you invoice them. And, you know, it's just part of a normal business. What happens with the gold no longer is a problem of the mine.
But, Robert, here's the point. Here's the point. They were looking for a company that had been around for, since 1980. That
right.
had a good
yeah, because
record.
They wanted to do business with Engelhardt
right.
and Johnson Matthey. Because
right.
they Johnson Matthey and Engelhardt don't take clients off the street.
That's right. And we had run, you know, hundreds of thousands of ounces through those guys, right? So
that's right, so, you would.
But
yeah.
But my feeling was, and I turned the deal down, and maybe I was wrong to do that. That was about 6 months ago when I turned it down. But I had this feeling that I had heard something on the radio about gun running coming out of Sierra Leone,
mm-hmm.
which was, you know, connected to drugs. And then I thought that probably they wanted to pick up the gold mine, because when you have a gold mine, it's very hard to prove how much gold is really in the ground. I mean, you can absolutely
right.
with geological reports, but I mean...
Well, that has nothing to do with money laundering. They take the gold and they do with it whatever they want. It's their gold, as long as they have a license to export, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But
right.
That's not money laundering. But Sierra Leone is not a healthy country.
That wouldn't be a country I get involved with either. Tom in Toronto. Got to be quick.
Oh, thanks. Hi. My question is that there's companies that, like, for example, the American government and other, like, example, Oliver North. What type of account do they use to do those kind of operations, the Iran-Contra?
Oh, that's good. The Iran-Contra affair here in the United States, right.
Yeah, that was financed by black money.
Offshore accounts?
I presume. I don't know. I wasn't part of the Oliver North saga.
Right. I actually have the report, the entire congressional report on that on my desk. I'm going to go look that up. And then, Jan, just because you've been waiting really long, do you have a really quick question? It's going to be really quick. Jan?
Yeah, the CIA... Could you talk about that a little bit, what their involvement in this?
Oh, I'm afraid you missed it because it was on earlier. So if you go back and catch it on a replay or in a stream link now called Coast Insider, it's all there. We did talk about that earlier. And thank you to everybody else then who waited for a long time to get on Coast to Coast. Wish we could have gotten on everybody. Thank you, Robert Landori. Check out his offer for the 2 free chapters for the new book, but most importantly for Havana Harvest, which is available in softcover, and it's a fun read. And you were a fun guest, so thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you, and it's also available in digital form.
Good. I will keep you in mind, too, when a story like this about money laundering pops up or offshore banking, don't be surprised if you get a call back from us sometime, okay?
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you. Have a great night and a great week, everybody. Stay warm no matter where you are. Deus te amat. And I do, too.